Good morning, everyone. Greetings from Conrad Grable University College. I spoke here a couple of years ago, and it's nice to be back in such a welcoming congregation. Today's scripture includes a segment from the book of Acts that we just heard. And this book of Acts is comparable in many ways to an ancient adventure story. Here, the apostles, especially Peter and Paul, travel around preaching the gospel, encountering very interesting characters and lots of opposition. In this particular scene, Paul is in Troas, but he receives a vision of a man from Macedonia who asks him to head to the region of Macedonia, which is in northern Greece, in order to assist the people there. Paul therefore travels by ship, eventually to Philippi. Philippi was not the capital of Macedonia, Thessalonica was, but it's interesting that the Greek text of Acts emphasizes that Philippi is a leading, or as some manuscripts say, first city of the region. It's also notable that Philippi is identified as a Roman colony, as we heard. In Acts, there are many Roman colonies, such as Lystra and Corinth, but the author never identifies them specifically as colonies. However, if you read through the rest of chapter 16, you know that issues related to Roman customs and Roman citizenship become central. Paul and his companion Silas are arrested for not following Roman customs, even though they're described as Roman citizens. They're beaten, thrown into prison, and various dramatic things happen, including an earthquake that causes their chains to break. Eventually, the magistrates of Philippi apologize publicly to the apostles for what has happened to them, and they're released. Identifying Philippi as a colony is thus important for the story overall. There's also a sort of incongruity in this account, something that the reformer John Calvin noted several hundred years ago. The man who appears in Paul's vision creates the expectation that all sorts of people in Macedonia await Paul's help. Yet when Paul first engages with people in Macedonia, it's with a group of women, and the only person who undergoes a conversion is not a Macedonian at all. This woman is from Thyatira, which is in Asia Minor or ancient Turkey, and her name, as you know, is Lydia. Lydia shows up here and then at the end of chapter 16, when Paul visits her after his release from prison, just before he departs from the city. We're not told that much about her, but the information that we do receive is quite intriguing. She's a worshiper of God, or a God-fearer. This means that she was a Gentile attracted to Judaism. It was not uncommon for Gentiles to go to synagogue, participate in Jewish prayers and liturgies, and follow aspects of Jewish law. When Paul meets Lydia, she's with a group of women in a place of prayer, possibly a synagogue. There is no mention of any men present, although it doesn't mean they weren't there. But it is entirely possible that the group was all women, because in ancient Judaism, there were women synagogue leaders. Lydia was likely divorced or widowed, as she is said to have had a household, and married women were not referred to in that manner. She deals in purple cloth, which could mean that she was wealthy, or at least she was of the merchant level of society, depending on the quality of the purple dye, which was expensive. She's likely a Romanized immigrant to Philippi, independent, fairly well off, involved in the ritual life of the synagogue. It's become customary to refer to this story as Paul's conversion of Lydia. However, Paul doesn't play a major role in this account. Rather, it is God who opens Lydia's heart such that she listens to Paul and is subsequently baptized with her household. She then insists upon offering the visitors hospitality, and hospitality was a paramount virtue in the Mediterranean. What I want to focus upon is this image of opening the heart and the listening that comes from that, as we heard during the children's time. What does it mean to have one's heart opened or to enlarge one's heart? And how does God do that? It's mysterious, not something we understand scientifically or empirically. What exactly did Lydia experience at that moment? The text doesn't tell us. Whatever did happen, it caused her to listen. When we consider the psalm that we heard earlier, Psalm 67, we can perhaps gain a bit more insight. This is a psalm of thanksgiving, which expresses gratitude to God for the blessings that the human community has received. Key to the psalm is the recognition of many blessings, and the psalmist sings out a great thanksgiving for such beneficence. Maybe, in part, Lydia experienced this sense of blessing. As a result, she listened intently to what was said, and she was baptized, and ultimately she displayed generosity by welcoming the apostolic party into her home. It's often a shock of recognition, or maybe a stab of beauty, which can make us stop in our tracks and listen. People will sometimes talk about moments in their lives when they've experienced some sort of insight that causes them to refocus or even reorient their life altogether. I suspect that for many of us, maybe most of us, there is no single dramatic point of reversal. Rather, it is in the daily things, the small things, observations of human kindness, tenderness, and generosity, or appreciation for the intricate complexities of nature that can cause us to stop and pay more attention. Think of what happens to you when you see a colorful butterfly all by itself for the first time in spring. It is a kind of magic. In our culture of distractedness, productivity, and multitasking, with our computers and our phones and our lists, it's increasingly difficult for people to simply pay attention to what's going on and to let our minds wander. I'm not talking about idleness, but more the experience of getting lost in thought. In fact, I've come across a couple of recent books that warn about the danger of losing the ability to daydream and to let our thoughts meander as we lie in the grass and gaze at the clouds. We're even at the point where people need to take holidays from their gadgets. And this can be very difficult, as gadgets, especially smartphones, have become addictions. Some of you may be familiar with the poet Mary Oliver, who died just this past January. She wrote that attention is the beginning of devotion. I think her poetry captures the insight and gratitude that emerges simply from attending to the world around us. She spent much of her childhood, which was quite solitary, and also her adult life in nature. She would roam the woods, pick up shells and odd bits of things by the sea, fall asleep in fields, and muck around with her dog alongside rivers and ponds. Poem after poem exudes the gratitude and awe she experiences from gazing at and thinking about flowers, trees, and animals. One of my favorites is called When I Am Among the Trees, and I'd like to share it. When I am among the trees, especially the willows and the honey locust, equally the beech, the oaks, and the pines, they give off such hints of gladness. I would almost say that they save me, and daily. I'm so distant from the hope of myself, in which I have goodness and discernment, and never hurry through the world, walk walk slowly and bow often. Around me, the trees stir in their leaves and call out, "Stay a while." The light flows from their branches and they call again. "It's simple," they say. "I too have come into this world to do this, to go easy, to be filled with light and to shine." In this poem, we encounter someone actually listening to the trees. She's not only walked among them, she's reflected on what they mean to her. This is the voice, in my view, of someone whose heart is opened, who listens, just in a very different context than that of Lydia. I think it is a kind of song of thanksgiving. The trees teach her that the hope of herself is to bow often. The trees teach her to give thanks. These days, paying attention in this manner is practically an act of resistance. Wandering around, listening to the birds, noticing the trees, reflecting, all these things can confront pressures to perform, to produce, to check off our to-do lists. It challenges the kind of cult of efficiency. It isn't that we shouldn't complete tasks, focus on our work, or gain satisfaction from our accomplishments. We have to do these things, and I have a daily to-do list that I take great satisfaction in crossing off. It's just that we also need, and some would argue that it is fundamental to being human, to spend time lost in thought, appreciating all that we have, whether it is in our relationships, or the wonders of art and music. And we need to spend time just wondering about life rather than constantly planning. Wondering, dreaming are hardly a waste of time. You might be questioning why I'm talking about such matters, because you are all paying attention right now. At least you look like you are. And you're here worshiping God, which is in itself an act of resistance to our productivity-focused culture. But even worship sometimes can turn into a task to complete, something to get done. Early on, Lydia was made a saint, and her feast day is celebrated on August 3rd in the Catholic tradition, while other traditions, including Lutherans, Anglicans, and Eastern Orthodox Christians, celebrate it on different days. Today, next to the ruins of Philippi, there's a Greek Orthodox baptistry of St. Lydia, filled with images of her and Paul, and from which you can look out over a river. The area is also a pilgrimage site for people coming to be baptized. The short narrative about Lydia in Acts, therefore, has spawned a rich tradition that includes architecture, ritual, and feast days. All of these things assist in remembering her story. It's not a deeply dramatic or lengthy account, but it can still inspire and model, I think, a way of being and doing that is essential for human life. The philosopher and mystic Simone Weil once wrote that attention is the rarest and purest form of generosity. St. Francis of Assisi, to whom the words of our responsive hymn are attributed, is famous in part for his love of animals and found great inspiration from his attention to the natural world. Paying attention means we're stepping out of ourselves to listen and notice something or someone else. It may seem a small thing, but in fact, as Lydia shows us, it's an act of generosity.